today with an interview with Mindy Vanderford. She's with a group called Crestone, and they work in terms of dealing with addiction and anxiety and just helping to really address social issues. So, Mindy, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
Thank you so much for having me, James. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your background.
So my background, our foundation, the Crestone Freedom Project, we are addressing addiction of all kinds, substance abuse disorder. And I come from a family history of addicts, and which led me into a passion to find out exactly what is the root cause of addiction and the pain that these individuals experience, and to be able to help them, and that, you know, to make a difference.
What? How long have you been doing this kind of work?
This is our first nonprofit organization. We've been working on putting this project together for about 6 years now. We've been working with several doctors and research individuals to work this and put it together. And so it's been quite a journey.
And you're located where, in Colorado?
Yes, we are located in Crestone, Colorado, and we are in the fundraising efforts of our foundation right now. We have been working to put together a facility with our project to get up and operational.
So what have you figured out? Like, what's the root cause of addiction? Like, why is one person affected and another's not?
Well, many people have different views on addicts. A lot of people think it's a choice that a person makes, of that, you know, addiction is their lifestyle, and no one chooses to be an addict. The research that has been done on addiction, and what has been found, is that addiction comes from a loss of connection and trauma that a person has suffered through their life at some point, mainly in the childhood years, between 0 and 7. But trauma can happen at any point in your life, and no one likes to experience pain. So if you have a horrible accident and you have a pain in your leg, you broke your leg, you have a pain medication for that. Someone who has experienced a death, someone who's just experienced an extreme loss, they have an emotional pain. And so substance is what those people turn to deal with that pain, because it's too much for them. And so they look to deaden that pain, and using alcohol, drugs, whatever it may be, to cover that pain up.
Well, but if somebody had like a traumatic experience when they're like 4 or 5, I mean, they're not turning to alcohol or drugs when they're 4 or 5, so.
No, this is a pain that stays with you. A traumatic experience, whether a child grew up in a physically abusive home or a home with an alcoholic where there's yelling and screaming, it's the environment.
Yeah.
That they have been raised in that causes that mental and emotional anguish. And so some people don't even realize what the cause of their addiction is, because they've tried to bury it throughout their life so that they didn't have to deal with it. And yeah, it's a lot of people, it's kind of hard for them to comprehend that, okay, wow, you know, trauma at an early age like that can really affect you in your later years, and most definitely. And there's been many, many studies. Dr. Gabor Mate is one of the people we've made his research extensively, and over again, addiction leads back to trauma.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Jeffrey Friedman, I've actually interviewed him before here. We've talked about adverse childhood events and kind of the roles that they play in kind of layering. When you have multiple childhood events, it leads to that kind of outcome where you have increases in terms of alcohol or drug abuse, or even lowered life expectancy.
Yes, and you know, an addiction comes in many forms, not just, you know, alcohol and drugs. You know, eating.
Yeah.
You see a lot of girls who've been sexually abused as children end up overweight, obese, and just a very low self-esteem and depressed. And so, you know, you see people stopping addictions and all sorts of addictions. They're coming from somewhere, and usually those can be related back to a traumatic experience in their life, something they've had to, you know, go through and have not processed and dealt with. It's being covered up.
So when you have those kinds of experiences, what I've found is that they tend to haunt people and keep coming back. So how do you kind of escape that chain of something always coming up?
Well, that is a great word there, escape. And we want to come to the point of healing that you're not escaping. You have to address the pain head on to ever heal from it. And it's processing it and looking at it and realizing there's a lot of these individuals with traumatic experience as children, you know, they may blame themselves.
Yeah.
And so you have to work through those issues, and it takes time. And that's one of the issues we have with standard addiction treatment, is that they only give 30, 60, 90 days treatment, and that's not even enough time to address the root issue of their addiction. And so coming through a treatment process and healing process to get to the other side where they can look at that pain, they can sit and look at it and be okay with it. It was something they experienced, but it's not who they are anymore. They don't have to run from it. Or try to bury it.
Mm-hmm.
They see it for what it was, learn from it, and can grow and move on in life and be productive. It is no longer the ball and chain that they're dragging around behind them.
So how do you deal with it when you have a situation where, let's say, you only have 30, 60, 90 days where you're able to help somebody, but it's going to take longer for that process of healing to take place? How do you make that happen?
Well, that's what I'm working here in Colorado to try to change. It's trying to change policy of, you know, insurance paying for inpatient treatment and longer treatment so that those issues can be addressed. It's not a small task, but we're making, you know, strides every day to try to change the system and the way that addiction is viewed and how treatment can actually be helpful and cut the recidivism rate, because if our 30 and 60, 90 day programs were actually being very successful, we wouldn't be having an 85% recidivism rate in our prison system. And so I think at this point in time, our state officials and even across the United States are realizing that, you know, hey, we have to do something different. Let's look at this, because, you know, putting addicts in jail is not solving anything. They're sitting there. They're not being helped. They're going to get out of jail, and they're going to repeat, because there was never any help given to them. And so if we treat addiction as a mental health problem, as such as it is, this is trauma, this is emotion that we're talking about that needs to be processed, instead of treating the criminal aspect of it, we get much further.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a mental health issue, you're getting help, you're getting treatment. A person's able to process all the things that have happened in their life, besides, you know, alternative of going and sitting in a jail cell for 18, 24 months or 4 years, you know, and there has to be a change. We want to have, you know, there needs to be an awareness of what addiction really is, and we're hoping that the rest of the nation will catch on.
What role do one of the things that seems to be prevalent is you know, people who have had problems tend to keep associating with people that kind of reinforce those issues, you know, and it would seem like the solution would be to, if you eliminate negative influences, and it's kind of a phrase within I've heard a number of times, if you eliminate negative influences, you change the course. Is that something that you try to incorporate, or how do you manage that?
Yes, a lot of addicts are coming from families, dysfunctional families with addiction also. And so that is a challenge when a person is going back in, you know, reentering society, and you know, their closest relatives or closest family members, you know, are still in that same vicious cycle or pattern. And so being able to place those individuals, you know, outside in a different county, different city, is very helpful. And I think much more productive, and that is something we want to incorporate and try to make happen for those individuals, and making sure that they have a solid foundation themselves, their self-esteem, their worth, that they are loved and they are accepted. You know, just because you've made bad choices in your life does not make you a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone deserves a second chance. And with addicts, they seem to carry around, and it's also preached to them that, you know, you're an addict for life. You're always going to have this problem. And we do not believe that whatsoever. Addiction is just something that is a result of trauma, and that can be worked through. It's not something that is going to be plaguing you the rest of your life. But getting the adequate treatment for it is just absolutely necessary to be able to break that cycle.
Yeah. In some ways, one of the crueler parts of abuse is the fact that the abusers tend to blame the victim, like they're saying they're bad, and then the victim kind of takes that on. How do you help people escape from that kind of thinking?
Of them seeing themselves as a victim.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, everybody does, you know, they make their own choices. This is not something that was pushed on them. They weren't made to do these things or made to take the drug. It's education. It's being, you know, educated of exactly what addiction is, what drugs do, and what is the source of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes time in talking, you know, and offering different therapies and avenues of releasing that trauma, whether it's music therapy, art therapy, whether it's writing, yoga, meditation, all different things to help that person come into a better state of mind where they can actually see what has transpired and their role in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're ultimately responsible for themselves. Mm-hmm. And no one else.
What role does spirituality play in terms of helping people to overcome?
I think that spirituality is very important to a lot of people, and they all connect on different levels. And having that available to someone, I think, is very important, that they've missed that in their life, that they haven't really even been able to recognize what that void may have been. And so just going back to the basics and having an opportunity for a person to be able to reach out and study, research, and find out what's available and what they really connect with. Religion is a very touchy topic with individuals who really have such strong views about religion. But I think a spiritual connection, just a connection with one's personal own feeling and relationship with a higher power.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of that also part of that also is really also in terms of building community. So how do you go about building a sense of community among people who have different different experiences, or but you know they're kind of going through the same journey?
Well, I think in community, and you know, our program is built on a therapeutic community, and that's all the individuals working together as a team and building each other up and being able to appreciate, you know, the differences. The world is made up of all kinds of people, and being able to see their views and understand them and, you know, and still love each other and accept each other. and being able to come into a community with people of like mind who are accepting and loving makes a huge difference.
Is there something that somebody could do if you see a situation of, let's say, a younger child? Like, what would you suggest somebody who's being exposed to that kind of trauma is going to lead to negative consequences down the road? What can we as adults do to try to help? Because society kind of says, hey, butt out, that's not your problem, you know?
Right. You know, and that's a tough one, you know, because I'm sure everybody runs into those situations from time to time where you're in Walmart or the grocery store and you see someone yelling profusely at their child and all these instances. And it's really hard to be able to walk up to someone and say, you know, hey, you know, someone trying to give them, critique them on their parenting is usually not very well received. And I guess as a community, as being, you know, being very supportive of those around us and their children, and letting them know that they have a place to come to and talk. I think that having a group of parents that can meet and talk about their challenges as parents with their children, and having a mentor to be able to guide them in how they can handle situations differently and be more loving and accepting of their children, I think that would be a great thing to have in communities and be very helpful, because the alternative is, you know, someone calling CPS, DHS, and that also just causes more trauma.
Yeah.
Because when a child has to be removed from a home, that's just another trauma for that child to deal with for the rest of their life. So having a community supporting their parents, I think, is very, very important.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guidebook that comes with parenting, and, you know, there's no license required, so we're all doing the best that we can.
There's no handbook.
Yeah. And especially when you've come from a situation before where you've gone through trauma, and a lot of times that trauma gets passed down to the next generation.
Yes, because people are always trying to compensate for what they lacked as a child. Yeah. You know, you find a person who's very controlling and just extremely cautious of every move their child makes. That parent probably came from a home where she wasn't really watched and nobody really cared what she did.
Hmm.
So she is overcompensating with her child, and her child feels suffocated and rebellious. And she's trying to be the better parent, but she doesn't realize how she's affecting the child at the same time. And so that's where that community support and having behavioral therapists come in and work with parents to better their skills.
I completely agree. I mean, the sad truth is most of those behavior therapists are sadly underpaid and completely unappreciated when it comes to what's going on with society.
Right, and what society is lacking is mental health professionals, you know, in our schools, and being made available, you know, to the issues that we all have to deal with on a daily basis. And because it's what is causing this substance abuse crisis across the nation, is this, you know, all of these kids are being raised and having all these issues that they're never being dealt with, and they're all turning to substances and alcohol to cover this pain up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to start somewhere, and starting in the schools and with parents is a great opportunity to change.
So is it a matter of really, as parents, kind of going to the school board to demand, you know, that schools take a more active role in terms of the psychological health of the kids?
School board, also reaching out to your state representatives, your senators, because these are going to be the funding. That's where your funding is going to come from, is each state.
Gotcha. What advice would you have for somebody who's going through a situation where they're dealing with a family member who's going through addiction? What would be your advice?
My advice for someone who's dealing with, you know, their family member who's going through addiction is to reach out and really research the facilities that your that you're considering for that individual, and you know how they're being approached. What type of treatments are they using? Are they using CBT? Are they, you know, what is it they're really using to help that person and heal that person? Because that's a huge difference, and not everyone has the money for treatment. I know there are grants available for people that need treatment that can't afford it. There's also other, I'm sure, nonprofit organizations across the United States and that you can get help, even churches and things that will reach out and help people with treatment. The holistic treatment program, I think, is the best avenue. They will treat the whole person, not just the addiction itself, because the addiction is just a symptom of an issue that has not been addressed.
So what does holistic treatment look like?
Holistic treatment is the whole person. When you have a person who's been addicted to drugs, alcohol for an extended period of time, you have nutritional deficiency, which also causes mental disorders. You know, there's going to be depression and all those things, and a body is just lacking of nutrition. So nutritional therapy, stress management. You have people that, you know, they have triggers from this trauma, and stress is usually the biggest trigger. So you need to be able to handle stress and anger management, yoga, meditation, you know, being able to calm yourself. And being able to relax, exercise, being able to be in nature. Nature is one of the most grounding things, and as a society, we've really lost connection to nature. And being able to have just a well-rounded treatment program is the ultimate thing to have.
What role does artistic expression play?
We've been talking with many different artists and even music, but artistic expression is just another form of releasing traumas, whether it's in painting or sculpting. People have all different ways of being able to release that. Even writing, journal writing is another way of trauma recall.
Yeah.
To be able to express those things. And so that's something that is a great help. Some people are drawn to it, some people are not. So when I say having a well-rounded, holistic treatment program, that's, you know, having something for everybody is a great thing to have.
So is your facility open right now? Are you treating people, or are you still in the process of building the actual facility for the program?
We are actually in the process of funding a facility. We have a property located, and we are in the process of getting that facility funded.
All right. If people want to learn more about the work that you're doing, or if they have other questions, how can they reach out to you?
They can visit our website at www.creststonefreedomproject.org, and you can also reach out to me, Mindy, M-I-N-D-Y, at creststonefreedomproject.org, or by phone, and that is 719-480-8204.
Awesome. Mindy, I appreciate you taking the time to chat, and what I'd like to do is maybe follow up in the fall once things move farther along in terms of your development with the project and the building.
That would be great.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, James.
Good luck.